Hi, this is Ewan from Waking Up the Workplace, and I'd like to tell you a story. In the winter of 2010, we set out with perhaps the audacious idea of helping kickstart the conscious business movement. We didn't really have a clear idea of how we were going to do it, but we did have some pretty big ideas. We basically wanted to change the world through business and hopefully change ourselves through doing so. And as we dove into our curiosity, we found ourselves with more questions than answers. So last year, we gathered together 17 people from the world of conscious business and asked them the kind of burning questions that we'd been collecting. In essence, we held a conversation around this inquiry. What would happen if we saw the business of work not just as a means for trade and profit, but as a vehicle for realizing our deepest human potentials in a conscious and creative transformation? It was a pretty profound experience for us, and judging by the amount of emails and messages and phone calls that we've had from people, it's pretty profound for a lot of others too. But then we kind of sat back and we asked ourselves, well, what do we do now? We've laid out a kind of vision and we've explored the question of what conscious business can be, but where do we go next? And it was that question that led us to create a kind of learning course that we ran in May and June of this year called Agents of Conscious Business. And that featured a number of teachers that we interviewed in our original series. And it was a course that we hoped would start to really help people embody and practice this new and conscious way of doing business that we'd explored in the series. So what you're listening to here is a collection of excerpts from some conversations we've been holding with these teachers, exploring the question of how we can each become an agent of conscious business. I've tried to weave these into a kind of narrative that I hope will take you on a journey from the state of the business world as it is to what it can become and some of the things that we'll find along the way. So we start with Bill Talbot, author of the book Action Inquiry, who sets a kind of high-level framing of where our human development has reached today and the need for a new kind of power that is based in mutual vulnerability and transformation.
I think what we've found over the last 500 years is that human development moved from a kind of center of gravity around hierarchical structures and the use of unilateral power in very direct ways, and dependency relationships in families and organizations and states. We've moved from that to a market, contract, democratic, independent set of action logics, and the primary productive action logics have been what I call the expert action logic and the achiever action logic, which are aimed at producing results in the outside world and using empirical data to improve technology. And they aren't inward-looking. They aren't interested in the actual effects one has on the whole system, only on the immediate effects and whether they're profitable or not. And so as our technology has grown, it has led us to the position where we can't really any longer deny that we are having effects on the planet and on one another that we don't really intend to have and don't want to have over the long term, but we don't know how we'd correct that, really. And to correct it, I believe, requires graduating out of the independent action logics into what I call the interindependent. So we preserve an independence, but we recognize our interindependence as well. And we become interested more in friendship under the sign of inquiry. We become interested in the covenants we make with other people prior to contracts and whether those have integrity to them and are mutual. And the interindependent personality wants to exercise power mutually rather than unilaterally. And even our theorists haven't theorized about mutual power yet. We have things called soft power, which is just is it just as unilateral as hard power is, only it works through diplomacy more than through arms. But we haven't learned anything about a mutual and mutually vulnerable and mutually transforming kind of power, which is what's needed for us to continue our development. So practicing that, I believe, practicing collaborative inquiry with other people is a key skill that traditional spiritual approaches don't tend to teach because they tend to remain hierarchical.
It's that calling for a new way of working together that Rand Stegen is trying to bring forth with his rather remarkable consulting company. So here's Rand explaining where he sees the challenge that lies before us in business.
The most complex problems facing communities, facing society, sort of, you know, at a global level, are simply not going to be resolved with the prior approaches. And so, with an emphasis on, you know, in the past of governments and other NGOs being the ones, quote, responsible for solving some of the biggest problems, you know, we realized about a decade ago that business. And business people and business platforms are really, you know, are arguably the best problem solvers in the world. And so how do we start to bring the best problem solvers in the world to actually the biggest problems in the world? And so that's really for us why this movement of conscious business or conscious capitalism is so important, because it starts to bring into the process a whole new set of skills and abilities to innovate and, like I said, solve problems.
Now, while it's kind of relatively easy to sit back and observe the global problems that we face and be inspired by the big ideas that many people are starting to articulate, it's a different kind of challenge that Fred Kaufman, author of the book Conscious Business, highlighted when I asked him what he saw as our biggest problem.
I would say the most challenging aspect of conscious business is not to understand the principles or even to understand the practices conceptually, but to put them into practice. And perhaps the difficulty of putting them into practice is that they're deceptively simple. People look at these practices, I've written about them, many people have written about them, they're, as I said, lots of excellent books, and they say, oh, I know this, because they cognitively can understand it. It doesn't require a lot of cognitive prowess to follow the process. You just read it, and it's like, oh, yeah, you do this. I mean, you let the other person finish. Here are the types of questions you ask. You pay attention to them. You understand their story. I mean, I would say any normal 12-year-old could do it. They would understand it conceptually. But then when you have to put it into practice, particularly in situations where a lot is at stake and you're emotionally engaged or revved up, that's so hard. That's what requires training, discipline, preparation. It's a little bit like meditation. Very, very simple. Just sit and let your mind focus until you try to do it. And you say, oh my God, you know, I can't even count my breath. I count till three and I start thinking about something else. I thought this was going to be easy. And conceptually, it's easy. You can read a book on meditation and say, I know meditation. But then it takes years to actually sit and breathe. And you say, I mean, what could be easier than just sit and breathe and count your breath or repeat some meaningful word or phrase? And you realize some days you can do it. Some days you take 30 seconds or 5 seconds and you're flying off into another thought. So I wanted to maybe put a plug for the course that you're trying to do, because I really praise you and your partners for focusing not just in the awareness, but also what does it take to be an agent, to act in the world in alignment with these principles.
It was this question of alignment with reality that Brian Robertson then addressed, and how basically, in essence, it's a question of purpose.
Right, there's an alignment with something, and I think purpose is where that alignment is most powerfully placed. A purpose, our sense of purpose or potential, something we're here to do. What are you here to do? You know, what is reality calling for from you? What is the deepest creative or generative capacity that you have to offer to the world or to the organization you're within? And the same question for our organizations. You know, we have organizations there. They have the capacity to generate and create They have a potential to express. So for me, the first piece is you got to get clear on purpose. And it doesn't mean you have to be completely clear on, you know, what's your whole life's purpose. It's for now. It's right now, right here, where you are. What has your whole journey in life leading up to this point, perfectly prepared you to create, to do, to manifest, what potential to serve? And same question for our organizations. And once you have a purpose to align, then I'd say the challenge to be well used is, okay, well, can you perceive reality? Can you perceive constraints to that purpose expressing? Mm-hmm. Because I think we get in trouble sometimes when we try to push a purpose into the world. It doesn't need it, and if we're doing that, if it has that feel of push or put, you know, fight to get it in, we're losing something. Purpose, when you get into a really deep natural purpose or a potential, as far as I can tell, it seems to be some of the nature of reality. There's just a natural generative force or process, an evolutionary force, a generative force, a creative force at play. And that will happen naturally. You don't need to push it and force it. You just need to get out of its way. Mm. And you need to maybe help facilitate getting some other things out of its way. So I think once you have clarity on purpose, then it becomes sensing what are the constraints to the natural expression. That purpose is already trying to be born. What's constraining its natural expression? So you have to be able to sense that. And then how are you going to respond to that? What are you going to do with that constraint to get it out of the way and allow that energy to flow? And that's where I think the realm of consciousness is, right? What is consciousness but our capacity to sense and choose a response, right? So we have to be able to sense the constraints to our purpose and the organizations we work in and their purpose, right? Sense a constraint to that and then consciously choose a response. What are we going to do about it? What next? And this isn't a big, high, ideal thing, right? This is really mundane, which is, I think, what makes it so profound in a way. Mm. It's, what are you going to do next? What are you going to do tomorrow? You know, what are you going to do tomorrow to remove constraints to your purpose manifesting in the world? Mm. You're going to get cat food? You're going to go have a meeting with Joe? You're going to finish that proposal and send it? You know, what are you going to do? Are you going to tackle the biggest challenge facing your organization and try to remove it? I don't know.
I'm sure many of us identify with that desire to work from our purpose and be in alignment with the world at large. However, when I asked Fred Kaufman how we start to practice this kind of way of being, he had a really different answer.
I'll start with pain and dissatisfaction and taking the world as a teacher. Rather than take an approach that says, okay, I want to practice conscious business, and now I'm going to study and then I'll put it into action, I'd start very humbly and say, okay, what's not working for me? Where is the world telling me that I need to pay attention? And the way, this is like the first noble truth that the Buddha talked about, there's suffering. And if you look at your life, I mean, it doesn't have to be existential suffering, but it can be just a small pain or dissatisfaction, a sense that things are not going as well as I like them to be going. It doesn't even have to be bad. It's just not as good as I aspire them to be. And I look for something, things that are small, things that are manageable, that you can grapple with them. Don't go for the 1,000-pound weight in your first bench press. That's just not going to happen. Look for 5 pounds, and start building up muscle with little things that are not working. So the first point of practice is to let reality and let the world guide you by tapping you and showing you that there are hollow sounds somewhere in your structure. And then, you know, when you hear that talk, 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 that is like, oh, this doesn't feel good. Then rather than run away from that and say, oh, I want to think about something else, it's the opposite. It's like, no, pay attention to that. And take that as your teacher.
That practice of paying attention and being aware was something that all four of the teachers returned to again and again in the talks. And perhaps the greatest enemy to our awareness is attachment. Brian spoke into this in the context of sensing, but first here's Bill talking about attachment and what it takes for us to collaborate with one another.
For one thing, it means that you have to be aware of what's going on around you. in this way that you're actually, in effect, analyzing the action as you're involved in the action. And most of us are, if the action is at all tumultuous and has any conflict with it, we become very quickly identified with a particular point of view about it, and we quickly want to defend ourselves against others. And so it's very difficult to become more conscious in the moment, detach oneself from one's habitual behaviors and feelings, and give oneself an inner perspective that permits one to choose a kind of action that perhaps isn't one's habitual action, but would really clarify what's going on in this situation, or clarify what is at stake for me in this situation.
You know, where am I in my own life, my own development? Am I able to avoid my own attachments? I think there's something about that too. The more I get attached and stuck in a specific idea, desire, concept, any of those, the more I kind of lose the capacity to see, to sense. Mm. You know, the more I'm stepped back from noticing whatever's coming up, the more I can perceive and the more freedom I have to choose a response. Mm. And at the same time, the attachment to that stance, the attachment to non-attachment, is just another attachment. Mm. Right? So even noticing that, and when I do get stuck, and I do, when I do get attached to some idea or outcome or desire or whatever, noticing that too, and you know, letting that itself be okay. You know? Mm. The more I can just be aware of that and be conscious of it happening, you know, without, again, fighting it, but just conscious of the attachment happening, the more conscious I can be in general of my own state, the more I can avoid those attachments, the more they'll naturally dissolve, and that increases my freedom. It increases my freedom to see things and then to choose a response.
While awareness in many ways sits at the heart of conscious business, one of the other themes that kept emerging in these discussions was the practice of communication and translating these ideas into language that everyone can hear. So here's Rand Stegen talking about how he does this.
Stephen Covey said once that I really liked this term, to speak into people's hearing. How do we actually speak into their hearing? How do we meet them where they are? And that takes a combination, in my experience, of patience and humility and compassion and appreciation and respect for who we're dealing with. And so when I go into a traditional audience, I find in myself what are the traditional values that I have in my own interior, and how do I actually really honor those and appreciate those in myself, so that when I'm with a traditional audience, I can honor and appreciate, you know, what's important to them. And if I were to move into more of an achiever, more of a success status driven audience, how can I find my own achievement values in myself and then really appreciate them? You know, and finally, I may find myself with a more of a postmodern kind of pluralistic group that is that's really excited about a different set of priorities and has a different set of values. How do I find that in myself? I mean, the fundamental approach of being skillful in who we're talking to, unfortunately, we just don't see that as a common approach in the marketplace around conscious business and around the integral community. And I would suggest that it is a skill that is developed like anything through practice. And it's as much of a heart practice, in my opinion, as it is a head practice, where the integral maps tend to really stimulate lots of, quote, thinking. And there's a whole feeling dimension of our work that's critical to be able to build relationship, assuming that, you know, building relationship for client work is really an emotional exercise. So, you know, work in the emotions.
The act of bringing conscious business into the world is, I think, rooted in practice, and indeed practicing how to actually be in the world. So I'm going to end here with Fred Kaufman once again, who describes the process of mastery and what it feels like to be able to act with a sense of efficacy and freedom in the work that we do in the world.
Rather than look into the theory and then try to apply it, start very humbly looking to the first noble truth of your suffering, and then realize there's a method to your suffering. There's something going on that you're participating, And that is mostly due to ignorance, as the Buddha said. It's not that you're a bad person. It's, you know, you're trying to do something and you don't really understand how your behavior is counterproductive, or the way you're approaching things is not really congruent with what you need for your long-term health. And then you have to learn the method and then apply the method to the particular situation. So I said the method is available, it's open, the application, it's infinitely mysterious, and there's always something new, always something different. And that's why people love sports, I don't know, like sailing. So what is there to sailing? You just go out and you raise the sail and the wind takes you. No, but the sea is never the same. The wind is never the same. The conditions are never the same. You could have done it a million times, and this time is going to be different just because it's this time. So I am a lover of the infinite variety of experience. Theory is useful, but it's only useful to approach experience with full openness and confidence, because even though you know every time experience is going to be different, it's going to be a challenge that has never come across before, you can trust yourself that you can engage this challenge in a position of confidence, in a position of knowledge that you don't know exactly what it's going to be, but you know enough that you have the wherewithal to respond to it in the moment. You can sense and respond, and that's the wonderful feeling of mastery when you're a master in a domain. And that's the difference between the anxiety that I feel, for example, approaching a golf ball, and the joy that a good player feels approaching a golf ball. Well, it's not that we haven't read the books. I probably read more books than he did, but there's something in his body that even though the ball is always positioned differently and the shot is different and the conditions are different, there's just a confidence like, I'm going to hit this ball properly. And that's a beautiful moment when you accomplish it. And imagine what it would be like to work like that, to approach almost any situation or the situations that today are creating anxiety with a position, with a mind that's confidence in my self-efficacy, that's kind of the technical word that people use, that I can be effective in dealing with this. And you only gain that with sustained practice and looking for the world to guide you on where you need to learn something more.
I really hope you've enjoyed the story, and I want to pick up on a couple of things that Fred mentioned in this final excerpt. So for us, you know, waking up the workplace is about exploring and making available the insights of conscious business. But like Fred was saying, the theory is only useful in that it allows us to approach experience with fuller openness and confidence. And unlike theory, the application is like infinitely mysterious. So I'm wondering if you're someone who's interested in gauging that mystery and seeing how you can start to apply these practices in your own life. So if you are, then I've got an invitation for you. Over the next week or so, we're going to send you some excerpts from the Agents of Conscious Business course itself. And these tasters should give you some actual practices that you can engage in service of that pursuit of mastery that Fred was talking about. So I invite you to kind of try them out and see what happens for you when you do so. And if you feel called to dive in even deeper, then we're going to be running the 8-week Agents of Conscious Business course again this autumn, which features the teachers you've heard from on this recording, as well as Brett Thomas, David Allen, and some extra faculty we'll be announcing soon. So I truly hope this recording's been of service to you, and that you keep doing whatever you're doing and being who you are and offering your gifts to the world in whatever way you find yourself to be doing so. Because in the end, kind of isn't that all we can ever do? Until next time.